Hello, welcome back to Homeroom 603. I'm Megan Tuttle. I'm the president for NEA New Hampshire. Today we have with us Representative Shurtleff, and we're just going to be talking about some education issues and things going on. NEA New Hampshire does represent about 17,000 members in the state. We represent teachers, every group of the ESP, so paraeducators, you know, school custodians, bus drivers, food service workers. It runs the gamut of who we represent. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to be the next Speaker of the House.
Well, I was born and raised here in Concord and graduated from Bishop Brady High School in 1966, and realizing after looking at my SAT scores and my grades that college would not be in my immediate future, and that I was going to end up being drafted, I enlisted in the U.S. Army for 3 years and spent 3 years as a military policeman, 1 year of that in Vietnam. When I got out of the service, I joined the Concord Police Department, and then in 1974 was hired by the U.S. Marshal Service, and spent 26 years and retired in the year 2000 as a supervisory deputy. And after I retired, over the years I earned my associate's degree. I became a substitute school teacher in the Merrimack Valley School District.
Wow, how was that?
I really enjoyed it. You know, they called me one morning and said, "Will you work in the fax room?" And I thought they were saying F-A-X. It was F-A-C-T. And so I actually showed up at school with a book, and I said, "Seems silly to have me in a room with a fax machine." And they said, "Get down to room 103 at the middle school." And I walked in, and it was a special needs class. And I said, "Something's wrong here. I'm supposed to be in a room with a fax machine." And they said, "Oh, no, this is functional and cognitive training." And I spent the day there, and I was very nervous at first, but by the end of the day, I absolutely loved it. And just the fact of helping one young man put a washer and then a bolt onto a screw, and to see how excited he was. After that, that's what I primarily subbed in, was special needs classes, and mostly in the middle school and the elementary schools.
I think every one of our members can probably, you know, relate to that experience and think back to their first experience of actually helping a child and seeing that their face and just the expression on their face when they lit up. So you've explained a little bit, but like I said, we have 17,000 members across the across the state. Can you explain a little bit more why you think the Speaker of the House should be pro public education and what we can do to help make that happen?
Yeah, I think growing up in New Hampshire, I know New Hampshire's got a strong history on education. The first public school tax funded was in Hampton back in, I think, 1649. So we've always been pro-education. In our Constitution, we mentioned that we cherish education. And I come from a family that had two brothers who were teachers, and my sister was a teacher also. And I was a late bloomer. It took me till after my retirement to get an education. But I realize how important public education is in this state. It gives everybody an equal opportunity to be the very best they possibly can in whatever they want to do. When I was substituting one time, and this is about the dedication of our public school teachers, I was substituting at the Merrimack Valley Middle School in an English class. And there was a boy in the class that the teacher recognized he was a good student, but he never would do his homework. He'd always forget to do it. So she got him a portfolio, and she says, "I want you to write down the homework assignment, and I'll initial it. And when you get home, you finish your homework, and then you have mom sign off that you have finished your homework assignment, and then you'll be okay. Your grade's going to go up a lot." And the day I was substituting, the boy brought a note in, and he says, "This is from Mrs. Brown, from my mom." And I said, "Well, I'm going to see her tomorrow morning. I can give it to her." And so he left it with me, and I read the note, and it was from the little boy's mother, and this is an eighth grader. And the mother said, "I'm really sick and tired of my son chasing me around the house to sign this portfolio. I just want you to know I'm not going to do this anymore." And I thought to myself, here's this teacher going above and beyond, saying, "What can I do to get this child the grades that he really deserves?" But yet the mother wouldn't reach out and meet him halfway to try to help this child. And I thought to myself, there are so many communities that, in addition to educating the children, we also need to educate the families and the adults that are taking care of the children, some places the grandparents, and get them more involved. And But that's what I think of when I think of New Hampshire teachers and seeing teachers who go out of their way to buy winter coats for kids, going to Goodwill, and the teachers that having a child come into a kindergarten and have snack time, and all the kids would be taking off their snacks, and it'd be one or two kids, and all the kids would say, oh, they never bring in a snack. Mrs. Smith always provides it, and the snacks would be there that the teacher brought in. And it used to break my heart to see like a little girl who would reek of cigarettes but had no snack. The parents couldn't buy an apple or supper and have her bring in. And but in a lot of ways, the teachers in our public school are almost becoming surrogate parents themselves and being the role model for a lot of the children that they're not finding at home. And the other thing, I talk fairly often with our superintendent in Merrimack Valley. And several months ago, he was telling me that they estimate in the Merrimack Valley School District that 10% of the elementary students are suffering from some form of PTSD because of drug abuse in the families. And I'm working to bring in legislation to have a study to look at this, the effect of opioid crisis on children, and seeing what we can do as a legislature, and again, working with the public education system.
I was just going to bring that up. You know, every day, I started teaching 20 years ago, but it's gotten so much worse.
Yeah.
You know, since I started teaching, every situation you just described happens. We have grandparents raising kids. We have kids, you know, with food insecurities. They're not getting the support at home that they need. The basic thing for kids is they need to come into school ready to learn, and we have so many that aren't because of those things. So, you know, what else do you think we can do? Working with the education system, like you said, what are some things you think we could do to try to help out either educators or children to get the help they need? Just because, I mean, this is a huge crisis across New Hampshire.
It really is. And I look at the opioid crisis, and we need to do more. New Hampshire, we have the third highest per capita deaths of any state in the country. There's a lot of reasons why it's so prevalent in New Hampshire. But I think a lot of this, my own personal thought, is a lot of it goes back to mental health, and we need to do more there. And as a kid growing up in Concord, I remember when the Gallon Office Park was the New Hampshire Hospital, and every one of those buildings was full. And then in 1982, New Hampshire did the right thing. We deinstitutionalized people with mental health problems, and we gave them the halfway homes to live in, and we gave them counseling, and we made sure they had the right medication. But as New Hampshire is apt to do, we fall by the wayside and stop funding these very necessary programs. Mm-hmm. Now, talking to the Commissioner of Corrections, 50% of the men that are incarcerated and close to 60% of the women that are incarcerated have been diagnosed with some form of mental illness before they even got into the criminal justice system. And this is something a lot of what we're seeing is a result of our lack of doing anything in the area of mental health, especially with young children. We saw when the Anna Philbrook Center closed, first then they put a wing in at the New Hampshire Hospital. To me, it almost seems like an afterthought. And the same with what we're seeing at the SUNY Center and those, in the stories we hear about in foster care and the state dropping the ball there. And as children that we can help people and get them on the right path, instead of waiting until they get to a crisis state as an adult, treat them as a child and give them what they need and the support they need. And the last thing I'd say is I can remember years ago going on a tour of the women's prison when I was in Goffstown and had all these women there incarcerated. And I asked the warden, I said, who's taking care of these children's women, these women's children? And she said, well, usually their parents. And I think, I wonder how good their parenting skills are because they failed. It may have been the reason that their own daughter had problems later on. And that's something that concerns me. So I think we need to do more about the mental health of young children going into school.
Great. One of the things that's come up a lot lately, there's a few issues with educators, but in Manchester a few weeks ago, they were in a lockdown for 9 hours, you know, after for the entire day. In that situation, the active shooter was somebody outside of school. But the school security is still a concern, whether it's somebody coming into school or somebody outside the school. You just mentioned with the mental health piece of this, trying to get to the children before it becomes into a crisis situation. As speaker, what would you do to make sure our schools are safer?
Well, I know 10 years ago, I was invited to attend as a state representative, again, at Merrimack Valley, when the state police and the Concord police had went through a training session, what to do if there was a shooter on the premise, actually in the building. Mm-hmm. And they had the principals and the teachers involved. It was on a Saturday. And I think we need more training like that, what to do if something happens. It's sad. You look at all the school shootings, and the ones that are the heroes have been the teachers. And we got to do more. First of all, we got to do more with guns in itself. Okay. The whole issue of gun violence. First of all, we got to straighten out this decision by the state attorney general. The schools do not have cannot follow the federal law. That the New Hampshire law says you cannot make this a safe, a gun-free zone and a safe zone. And I know there's legislation being introduced both in the House and the Senate to correct that and say, and not say we're going to follow federal law, because we know federal law now under this administration could change at a moment's notice.
Right.
But to say the New Hampshire law says the gun-free zones. It's so sad. I went to the Lancaster Fair last month, and to walk into the fairground, big sign, no guns allowed. My Legion posts and some of our Republican reps do not believe it, has a sign, no guns allowed in this American Legion post. This is what we're coming to. And this idea of those that say that the right concealed carry and the right to bring a gun anywhere, it's ridiculous. And I worry, and I think back to the O'Brien term, when we almost passed a bill to allow guns on our state university campuses. And, you know, I have a nice personal relationship with the governor, and everybody talks about how friendly the governor and personable he is, and he is. But I think back to the very first bill that he introduced, the one that he fast-tracked through the House and through the Senate. And it wasn't dealing with opioids, wasn't dealing with school funding, wasn't dealing with the retirement system. That was the bill to allow concealed carry anywhere.
Right.
And that's the one we had the public bill signing, the NRA and gun owners of New Hampshire patting him on the back and taking pictures. And so for those that tell me what a wonderful guy the governor is, I just say, look at his legislative priorities. That tells you the kind of governor he is. And so we've got to do more as far as legislature. We've got to do more for our law enforcement community and more work between the school districts and the local law enforcement.
Right. You know, but luckily we were able to get House Bill 1415 passed last year,
yes,
which was the death benefit bill for any school employee killed in the line of duty. Hopefully we never have to use that, but yeah, it was passed. But that went, you know, kind of under the radar. There was no fanfare about it. We're the only, I think the only state in the nation that has that.
Right.
And wasn't even made a big deal out of. I mean, we can, like you said, there was a sign at the Lancaster Fair for no guns, but you can bring them into a school.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. So another problem we have in education today that's been ongoing is school funding.
Right.
And this is not an easy fix. I understand that. It's been a long time in the making, and it'll mm-hmm. be a bit of a time before we get it fixed. But if you're elected speaker, what can you do to ensure that schools are going to get the resources they deserve?
Well, one of the things I'd like to do, and I compliment Representative Cushing for bringing this bill in last session, and I'd like to see it come back again, that the state go back to paying the 25% towards Group 2 and teacher retirement. I serve on the Concord City Council, and during the Bill O'Brien speakership, we passed a law to take that funding away from local communities.
I remember that.
Oh, for Concord.
I was teaching.
For Concord, that was a $1 million downshifting, yeah, which is more than a 3% tax increase. Well, of course, we can't increase property taxes, so it meant schools didn't get paved and other things didn't get done that should have been done. The state of New Hampshire made a commitment back in the 70s, or the early 60s, rather, when the retirement system was formed, and we're paying at, 60% or more. And then we dropped off, as we did like with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to go back to paying at least 25% towards Group 2 and teacher retirement to take that off the burden away from local communities. So I'd like to see that legislation passed.
That'd be great.
And the other thing is just stop the downshifting. And of course, we had the voucher bill. And we didn't vote for that against that once, twice, three times we voted no in the House.
Yeah.
And some very close votes. And I have to compliment the 19 Republicans that came over and joined with us.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them got primaried and some of them lost their seats because of their votes. And they promised to go after them, and they did. But that was a terrible bill. And I'm a product of parochial school system. But my parents chose to send me to a parochial school. Taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for my tuition. I have a perfectly good public school. I could have gone to that just as well. Mm-hmm. Why we should be subsidizing parochial, private, and school homeschool is, it makes no sense. To me, it's a dumbing down of New Hampshire. It's almost purposeful to take away anything from public school system just to denigrate the quality of education in the state.
So I don't think I have to ask you how you feel about vouchers.
Oh.
I think we're clear. That was...
yeah, I've got over my shyness on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, if you could just, you know, yeah, a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, just a withdrawn.
And unfortunately, we know it's coming back. I mean, we know that this is
the governor has promised news. That.
Exactly. I mean, he's going to bring it back full force. Not sure what it's going to look like, but we know it's coming back. You know, we know Right to Work is going to be coming back because that's been submitted for the last 30 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we're going to keep up the same fight against it and not let them get passed. So one other thing on educators before we get into some of the retirees. We have an aging state. That's no secret. New Hampshire is just getting older.
I'm sort of the poster child of that.
And, you know, back in the Bill O'Brien years, mm-hmm. they decided to change the probationary period for teachers from 3 years to 5 years.
Yeah.
It's the longest in New England. And by the point, you know, by the time the 5 years has gone by, as a teacher, you've already recertified once with the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. So your superintendent, your principal have already signed off that you should be teaching still. So you have that from the Department of Ed, yet Bill O'Brien and others thought that it was still a good idea to keep it at 5 years. Do you really think the 5-year probationary period is necessary, or
no.
would you support going back to the 3?
I'd be going back to the 3. As I mentioned, I retired from federal law enforcement, and for us it was a 1-year probation period. Maybe 1 year is not enough to find out how good a teacher is going to be, mm-hmm. but I would definitely see have it go back to 3 years.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Right. And for our educators, you know, to know that they're on probation for 5 years, I really don't know any other profession that has that. So that's
how do you plan, you know, with your family and housing and all these things you may want to do, but not know for sure that you're to keep that job.
Right.
And that's just being punitive.
Yeah. So we agreed with that.
Yes.
So we have about 2,000 retired members in NEA New Hampshire, all of whom have gone without a COLA for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
The average educator retires with about $25,000 pension. Last year, we did pass a temporary allowance for some of the members, and we're calling it a diet COLA. It's not really a full COLA, but a diet COLA. And we almost passed the COLA for all members. So under your leadership, how do you think we can get over that hump and pass a COLA for everyone?
Well, I was the prime sponsor of that bill.
That's right.
And to give a 1.5%, it's been, 9 years since they got a cost of living. And it's ridiculous. As they keep adding to what their health costs but not give them money to offset that, as inflation does go up every year by 1.5% to 2%. I was glad we were able to get the $500 one-time payment to those making under $30,000 that have been retired for 5 years. That was something, but it's really a drop in the bucket, and we've got to stop. You know what we're seeing in public education. We're also seeing with public sector employees. We have such a dedicated workforce in the state. And living in Concord, which is really a company town with the state government, I know a lot of people that went to work for the state, and they knew they weren't going to make a lot of money on the job, but they knew they'd have a comfortable retirement. And they didn't make a lot of money, and now they're trying to now they have taken away that comfortable retirement by not giving them the cost of living allowance.
Right.
And so that's something we'd fight for in the next session, to bring back to at least 1.5%.
You know, the other piece of that, too, is a lot of retirees will put money back into the economy.
Oh, sure.
I mean, my mom's retired. She's not an educator, but she's retired. Every time she takes one of my kids out, she's putting money back in because, you know, can we go get this? Can we buy this? Or I'll give her some extra to go buy, you know, whatever it is. But they're putting the money back in. So an investment in them for everything they've done to keep up with everything is...
It's like throwing a pebble into a pond. You see the splash of the retiree receiving the money, but you don't see where that money ended up going into the local community. It's part of our economy in this state, and it's something we definitely want to see come back next session and finally get passed.
Great. So one last thing. Last year, the House passed a paid family leave program before it got to the Senate.
Yeah.
Most of our teacher members do have some sort of paid leave built into their contract, but most of our ESP members don't, so the educational support professionals. Yeah. I'm assuming some sort of paid family leave will be back on the agenda under your speakership.
Absolutely. Great. Mary Guile, Representative Mary Guile, who unfortunately is not going to run, not running for re-election, has been working on that for almost 20 years now, and we won't want to see it finally get passed. And it's so disingenuous for the governor to first say he was supportive of it and then to call it a vacation plan.
Yeah, no.
And you know, if you have somebody with a serious illness that you need to be home to take care of, it's important that you've got to be able to be there with them and not have to decide whether to be with your loved one or be, you know, in a classroom.
Right.
And so we're going to bring that back, and we're going to do all we can to get that finally passed.
Great. We're also going to be looking at some unpaid family medical leave for the ESP, because a lot of them don't work or can't work the 1,250 hours that you need for the unpaid leave. So we're going to be back again trying to get the 900 hours passed so that we can have our ESP actually have unpaid leave as well. Yeah. Both.
But what a dedicated workforce. And I saw that substituting our one-on-one aides, people who worked in the cafeteria, the custodians, everybody that's there that makes the schools run efficiently, and especially the one-on-one aides.
Yes.
I know their salaries are low, and they are so dedicated and go above and beyond, and to see how much they truly care for the children and how much they interact and are such a positive influence on their lives. So that's something we'd like to see.
Great. So just a few last things. Obviously, it's sounding like you have a great background. You have an amazing understanding of public education, which, you know, for our NEA members is huge to know that somebody is in office that's going to be helping them. And we look forward to working with you as the next Speaker of the House.
Well, likewise. We've always had a good relationship with the New Hampshire NEA. Mm-hmm. We look forward to the next session being our best pro-education session yet.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan.